who vibrated the sound. And still he accepted the instruction as beneficial for him, and therefore he engaged himself in meditation for 1,000 celestial years. One celestial year is equal to 6 times 30 times 12 times 1,000 of our years. His acceptance of the sound was due to his pure vision of the absolute nature of the Lord. And due to his correct vision, he made no distinction between the Lord and the Lord's instruction. There is no difference between the Lord and sound vibration coming from him. Even though he is not personally present, the best way of understanding is to accept such divine instruction, and Brahma, the prime spiritual master of everyone, is the living example of this process of receiving transcendental knowledge. The potency of transcendental sound is never minimized because the vibrator is apparently absent. Therefore, Srimad Bhagavatam or Bhagavad Gita, or any revealed scripture in the world, is never to be accepted as an ordinary mundane sound without transcendental potency. One has to receive the transcendental sound from the right source, accept it as a reality, and prosecute the direction without hesitation. The secret of success is to receive the sound from the right source of a bona fide spiritual master. Mundane manufactured sound has no potency, and as such, seemingly transcendental sound received from an unauthorized person also has no potency. One should be qualified enough to discern such transcendental potency, and either be discriminating or by fortunate chance, if one is able to receive the transcendental sound from the bona fide spiritual master, his path of liberation is guaranteed. The disciple, however, must be ready to execute the order of the bona fide spiritual master, as Lord Brahma executed the instruction of his spiritual master, the Lord himself. Following the order of the bona fide spiritual master is the only duty of the disciple, and thus completely faithful execution of the order of the bona fide spiritual master is the secret of success. Lord Brahma controlled his two grades of senses by means of sense perceptions. By means of sense perception and sense organs, because he had to engage such senses in the execution of the order of the Lord. Therefore, controlling the senses means engaging them in the transcendental service of the Lord. The Lord's order descends into cyclic succession through the bona fide spiritual master, and thus execution of the order of the bona fide spiritual master is factual control of the senses. Such execution of penance, in full faith and sincerity, made Brahmaji so powerful that he became the creator of the universe. And because he was able to attain such power, he is called the best amongst all the tapasvis. Omanyana timarandasya janajana shalakaya chakshubhuli tamena tasma shubhuli namaha shri chaitanya manavistam svapitanya kuntale svayam yukapadamayam dhatati svapadantikam. So the translation, Lord Brahma underwent penances for 1,000 years by the calculations of the demigods. He heard this transcendental vibration from the sky and accepted it as divine. Thus he controlled his mind and senses, and the penances he executed were a great lesson for all the living entities. Thus he is known as the greatest of all ascetics. So, we have Lord Brahma, who is sitting on the lotus flower, and who has just heard the vibration tapa, which came from an unknown source, and he accepted this as a divine instruction. This indicates that his consciousness was already developed. He basically had just taken birth, and there were no other persons around to instruct him. But he understood the meaning of this word tapa, so he apparently didn't have to learn language by basically listening to his parents speak, and so on and so forth. So the situation of Brahma is quite remarkable. he lives, first of all, for a very long period of time. So it is said that one day in the life of Lord Brahma is 4,320,000,000 years. And so the day, that means the period of daylight. So the day plus the night makes one full day. So that's twice 4,320,000,000 years. And then 360 such days make up 1 year in the life of Brahma. And he lives 100 years. So that comes out to a rather long period of time. It's interesting to consider how big these numbers are. Consider this number, 4,320,000,000. Now, if you replace each year by 1 second, you can ask how long that would be. And is how long is 4,320,000,000 seconds? And that comes out to about 137 years. So none of us has lived thus far for 4,320,000,000 seconds. So even that's a very long time. But the day of Brahma is 4,320,000,000 years. So, of course, there are changes in scale of time. Lord Brahma apparently lives on a different scale of time than we do. It's described that, for example, there was a king named Akutni, somewhat remarkable king. He was living on the earth, but and he had a daughter named Revati. So he wanted to get a husband for his daughter, and so he decided he would ask Lord Brahma to provide the select the husband. So he went with his daughter to Brahma Loka, where Lord Brahma lives. And I think not, this can't generally be done by the typical king, we'll find, but he was able to do it somehow. So he went there with his daughter, and Lord Brahma was engaged in listening to a symphony being put on by the Gandharvas. So he was busy. But after the musical performance was over, the king made his request, and Brahma laughed and said that, well, all of the prospective husbands that you were thinking of for your daughter died long ago. And as a matter of fact, the very civilization in which you were living has been reduced to dust, and all memory of it has been completely lost. So, in fact, 120,000,000 years had passed on the earth during the time that he was waiting there for Lord Brahma to answer his request. So, of course, the story goes that Lord Brahma told him that actually Lord Balaram is the suitable husband for your daughter. He's on the earth right now, so if you go back very quickly, you'll be able to meet him. And so he did that, and so Revati married Lord Balaram. So, somewhat unusual king. He was connected with Dwarka, by the way, in some fashion. The previous name of Dwarka was Kushastali. And this king was involved with that city. So, somewhat unusual king. There's another story also illustrating how time goes at a different rate for Brahma. That's the story of the Brahma Vimohana Lila, in which Lord Brahma steals the calves and cowherd boys from Krishna and hides them in a cave in a state of suspended animation just to see what Krishna can do. So, of course, the story is that Krishna immediately expanded himself as a duplicate set of calves and cowherd boys who were identical with the ones that had been hidden away by Brahma. So everything seemed to go on exactly as before. So the story is that Brahma, after hiding the calves and cowherd boys, returned to his abode. But he was quite worried about what he had done, because this was sort of somewhat rash thing to do. So within a moment of his time, he came back to see what happened. So during that period, 1 year had passed on the earth. So Brahma came back after 1 year and saw that all the calves and cowherd boys were still there, and he just couldn't figure out what happened. And then he checked in the cave and he found that they were there also. So this was quite bewildering to him. So finally Krishna revealed the actual situation. He revealed his full potency, and all the calves and cowherd boys that he had simulated were seen by Brahma as expansions of Krishna. They were all Vishnu forms. And Brahma was completely astonished by this. In fact, he even fainted as a result of seeing this. So in that story, the time period that Brahma was away, in his calculation, was one shruti. And you can ask how long a shruti is. So let's see. I forget the exact figure, but it's something in the order of 1/37,000th of a second. It's something like that. So it's interesting. If you ask how many 37,000ths of a second there are in 1 year, which was the Earth time that elapsed when Brahma was away, it turns out to be about the same as the number of hours that there are in 120 million years. So then it makes sense that the king, Kamputni, was in Brahma Loka for about an hour. It's the same ratio. And that fits the story quite nicely, because he went up there and waited for the symphony presentation by the Gandharvas to finish, and then asked his question and came back down to the earth. So there are different scales of time. So the situation of Brahma is that on the one hand he has a material body, but his body is so much greater in terms of its potencies than the material bodies we know of that it provides an interesting standard of comparison. So there's the story about how to show a child how far away the moon is. And the story is, you show the child the moon through the branches of a tree. And because if you just look at the moon in the sky and you don't have anything to compare it with, you can't really tell how far away it is. It's just a light you see. But if you see it against the branches of the tree, you can see it's a lot further than the branches of the tree. I was just noticing this kind of thing the other day. I was walking under one of the trees here, and through the tree you can see these cirrus clouds up above. And you can see, well, they're a lot further up than the branches of the tree. So you might think, well, the branches of the tree are quite far overhead. Those clouds were actually obviously much further than the branches of the tree. And of course, actually, the moon is much further than the clouds. In fact, if you use even the scientist figures for the distance to the moon would be about 500 times further than the clouds are further than the branches of the tree. So, gives you an idea of how far things are. But by looking at the description of Lord Brahma, you can get an idea of how great the Supreme Personality of Godhead is. And that's one of the functions of these descriptions in the Bhagavatam. Because if you hear directly of, say, the pastimes of Lord Krishna, as given, for example, in the 10th canto, then it's difficult there to appreciate the actual position of Krishna. So there would be a tendency to think that Krishna may be actually like an ordinary human being. That tendency would be there. But if you compare Krishna with Brahma, then you can see how great Krishna must be, because he is unlimitedly greater than Brahma. But Brahma is so much greater than we are that it's hard even to understand his situation. So these time spans can help do that also. For example, you think of something that is eternal. It goes on for an infinite period of time, and it never had a beginning. So no matter how far back you go in time, you never come to the beginning. So it's a little bit difficult to understand infinity. But you can make a comparison, let's say, with the lifespan of Brahman, which is, 4,320,000,000 years is one day. So that's actually nothing compared with infinity. Infinity is quite large. You can say take a billion, and then a billion times a billion. That's still nothing compared to infinity. So you can multiply a billion times, and that's still nothing compared to infinity. But you can take that number, and you can multiply itself, that number by itself, a number of times equal to that number, which is still nothing compared to infinity. And you can keep up that process. Of course, quickly it becomes meaningless. We can't even imagine a number like that. So you can say that, but it's just words, because you can't even grasp how big that is. But still, those are finite numbers. So Krishna, in terms of time, is infinite like that. In terms of, let's see. Extent over space, consider that Brahma is the creator within this universe. And this is just one universe. So there are unlimitedly many universes. Each universe is like, it's compared with a bubble of foam in the ocean. So if you've ever walked along the shore of the ocean, especially in a place like San Diego, you'll see that there's a lot of foam. And the foam is made of tiny little bubbles that you can hardly see. But the ocean is vast, and there's this foam extending over a vast area. So you can imagine that each little bubble of foam corresponds to an entire universe floating within the causal ocean. So that gives you an idea of how big the universe is. So within each universe like this, there's a Brahma. So Brahma is so much greater than we are, but there are innumerable Brahmas. Furthermore, it turns out, this is curious, it seems we always wind up getting humbled in various ways. So it turns out that this is the smallest of the universes. Of course, I imagine there are probably many universes the same size as this one. It's sort of like the Volkswagen model universe, you might say. But in any case, many other universes are a lot bigger than this one. So there's an account that illustrates this, in which Lord Brahma went to see Lord Krishna in Dwarka. So the story goes that a lot of demigods and so on were visiting Lord Krishna. And so he had a secretary who was keeping track of everybody's appointments and scheduling and so forth. So Brahma went and sat down in the waiting room and told the secretary, please tell Lord Krishna that Brahma has come to see him. So the secretary went in and came out a little while later and said, well, Lord Krishna wants to know which Brahma has come to see him. So Brahma was a little bit astonished by that. So he said, well, it's the four-headed Brahma who's the father of the four Kumaras. That should at least identify who he is. So later when Brahma got to see Lord Krishna, he asked Lord Krishna, well, what did you mean by asking which Brahma has come to see you? Is there any Brahma other than me in this universe? So Lord Krishna meditated and sent out a message to innumerable Brahmas in various universes. And all of them immediately came into the same room with Krishna and our Lord Brahma. So it's said that these Brahmas had varying numbers of heads. seems pretty much they went by powers of two. There were four-headed Brahmas, and then Brahmas with 16 heads, 64 heads, and then many thousands of heads. This creates, by the way, a problem for artists. There's a painting by Jadarani, I think Teachings of Lord Chaitanya, which depicts this. Each of these Brahmas sort of looks like a Christmas tree of heads. And of course, you can wonder, well, how does this work exactly? How are the necks arranged? What to speak of the esophaguses. But in any case, so there were Brahmas there with millions of heads. So the thought that I've had on this is that these heads must be arranged in a higher dimensional fashion. Because in higher dimensions, you have more room for things. In any case, the entry of these Brahmas into Krishna's room was definitely a higher dimensional thing. Because it was interesting that our Brahma could see all of them by Krishna's grace. But each of the other Brahmas found that he was alone with Krishna in that room. And each one of them separately had a conversation with Krishna. So Krishna would say to the Brahma, well, how are things doing in your universe now? And Brahma would say, well, now that you've incarnated in my universe, there's no problem with the demons. So each Brahma thought that he was with Krishna in his own universe. And he couldn't see these other Brahmas. So that means that the one Krishna was in all the universes of these different Brahmas at one time. And each Brahma was visiting him within his own universe. But our Brahma was allowed to see all of that. So each Brahma was separately bowing down at the feet of Lord Krishna. And it's described that when his helmets would touch the floor at Lord Krishna's lotus feet, there would be a clinking sound. And so the total summation of all these clinking sounds from unlimited millions of Brahmas was heard by our Lord Brahma. It was a tumultuous sound. So somehow or other, he was able to see within that one room all of the different Brahmas, meeting Krishna, who was simultaneously in all of the different universes. So that was the situation. So that gives you an idea then of how great Krishna must be. Because we have trouble even imagining how great Brahma must be. But Krishna could summon all of those Brahmas. And of course, that's not all that he was doing. That was just one of his activities. So let's see. Now, in the purport, Srila Prabhupada then makes some practical observations concerning this. Actually, it's interesting to consider what the implications are if all of this is true. Because you can say, well, wait a minute, is this true? Can we really believe this? What are the implications? So, the basic story that you have presented here is that, of course, you have Krishna, who is a person who created everything and who's in control of everything. He has deputed this being Brahma, who he created, as the secondary creator of the universe. So Brahma proceeds by creating a number of very powerful beings called Prajapatis. These Prajapatis then create additional beings. And they produce generations of beings and so forth, and finally you have the entire population of the universe being generated. So you have basically a hierarchy with different levels. There's Brahma, there's the Prajapatis, there are the ruling demigods and so forth. And the whole thing is organized, and it is all under control. There's intelligent control at every level. So the universe is, actually the word for it is cosmos. Cosmos is a Greek word, and the counterpart of that is chaos. So chaos means that everything is just disorderly. just running just by natural forces, basically. And cosmos would be an orderly universe controlled by a higher authority and power. So according to this description, what we're living in is actually a cosmos. It's actually controlled at every level. Now, it turns out that the basic assumption of modern civilization, on which everything is running, is that we are the only intelligent beings who are within at least the part of the universe that we're interacting with. If there are any other intelligent beings in the universe, they're very far away, and we don't see them or have anything to do with them, and they don't come here. So, according to that basic way of looking at things, we're completely in control. At least we're the only intelligent controllers. There may be forces in nature that are more powerful than we are. For example, if there's a tremendous earthquake, it'll knock down our buildings and so forth. But there's no intelligent power that is above us. So therefore, we can decide what we want to do and carry out our plans without any consideration that we might be violating some higher rule or higher authority. And that's basically what you have in modern civilization. And interestingly enough, the result is that we make a total mess of things. And there's the widespread fear that we're destroying the environment of the Earth and so on and so forth. So, but if the description given here is true, then there are higher authorities in the universe. There are higher authorities directly involved with this Earth, and in fact, our activities are offensive to these higher authorities. So that would indicate that one can expect some kind of punishment or retribution. This is the basic picture that you get if you accept what is being said here in the Bhagavatam. So, in any case, so I'll stop there. Are there any questions or comments? Yeah?
Rama is praised for being able to walk before austerities for 1,000 years, celestial years.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to be offensive with the word Rama, but is that such an accomplishment considering his lifespan? What is his equivalency to us? If I perform austerities for a few hours, is that equivalent?
Well, one thing I wondered concerning these relative time spans of Dhamma is just what his consciousness is during those spans of time. For example, let's say that about an hour in Satya Loka would correspond to 120 million years here. Now, in an hour, most of us don't really accomplish very much. And what I've observed is that what you can accomplish in an hour varies quite a bit. For example, you can be sort of in a semi-comatose state, and an hour goes by just like that, and you haven't done anything. On the other hand, if you're really alert, really in a good state of consciousness, you might get a lot done within an hour. So that indicates that within the same period of clock time, we can experience, we can have differing degrees of experience, both in terms of quality and quantity. So the question is, what is the experience that Brahma has in 1 hour of his time? He might actually pack in 120 million years worth of our consciousness in that time. And furthermore, not only that, but it won't be 120 million years of distracted consciousness, just going this way and that. It may be 120 million years worth of focused consciousness. Now, what could you accomplish if you could do that? You might create a universe. So, it seems to me that this is quite possible. So, when Vermont was meditating for 1,000 celestial years, then that might, in fact, be quite beyond our meditation in an hour or so. So that's a thought concerning that. Yeah?
It's another king who went also had the same experience and he knew nothing of the one who was responsible ultimately for the story. Buddha,
yeah.
When he went to see Hema Madhava and then decided to, was instructed to build a temple for him, he constructed the temple and then went to Lord Brahma to ask him to do the honors of carrying out the installation. He had the same experience when he came, Lord Brahma agreed, but when he came back, the temple was destroyed and generations of his predecessors were destroyed. No one knew who he was, no one knew what was going on. And another temple had been constructed for which someone else was taking credit,
yeah,
and was going to install the deity, so he had to figure all that out.
Right. Yeah.
The demigods, they also get to go to Brahma Loka sometimes, mm-hmm, especially when there's a problem.
Yeah.
Now, the demigods, time span is greater than ours. Is it proper to think, though, it's less than Lord Brahma's because Brahma's on a higher platform?
I believe so.
So when they go and they come back, the same thing, the same massive change in time, when Lord Bhumi, Mother Bhumi, went to Rama to complain that the earth is being overrun, and then they all went to the ocean of milk, and then they came back. By that time, there should have been a whole different population on the earth.
Well, yeah, what did Mother Bhumi do? I don't know exactly. Maybe that she didn't spend very much time there. But I don't really know the answer to that.